While many teens in America worry about the challenges they'll have in college, many others are just struggling to finish high school. Frontline's Dropout Nation examines the climbing rate of high school dropouts from public schools in Houston, where Frank Kuhn and his crew followed four teens around their high school to observe the progress of an experimental reform program. The documentary airs on PBS tonight at 9, and I'm very pleased that it brings writer and producer Frank Kuhn to our show today. Hello.
Hello. How are you?
The high school you chose to focus on is called Sharpstown High. Why that school out of all of the high schools in the United States?
Well, we started focusing on the Houston school district, kind of at random, but it's a school district that historically has a problem and it's trying to do something about it. And so in meeting with the folks that run the school district, who are very receptive to the project, much to our great surprise, we talked about a number of different schools and actually filmed at a number of different schools.
What was this school's reputation?
Sharpstown has a pretty bad reputation historically. In fact, it was on a list of four high schools that were to be shut down, possibly dismantled. It has been on the unacceptable list in Texas for quite some time.
And according to the school's principal, it does have a common denominator mm-hmm. among its student body.
That would be poverty.
So has it been zoned to cater only to poor kids?
I don't know that it has been zoned specifically. It's more that it was a neighborhood that simply became a poor neighborhood. Sharpstown was one. It's sort of the Levitt town of Texas. It was one of the first, you know, planned suburban communities, but that was decades ago.
Should we be surprised that some of these kids drop out? Some of the ones you show in the film have parents with serious drug problems. Some are have parents in prison. Others are homeless or working full-time jobs to support the family members that are still in the country.
I frankly think that we should be surprised that they make it as far as they do.
Because a number of these kids are really motivated, but they also, and we shouldn't be surprised by this, they also act out sometimes, maybe because they have just so many burdens.
Oh, they do. They do. And, you know, one of the things that we noticed at this school is that it seemed like three quarters of the problems that these kids had were all outside of the school. This is stuff that they bring to school every day. Their problem isn't that they're not good at math. Their problem is that their life gets in the way of them effectively learning math.
And often we hear people say, well, we shouldn't blame our schools. We should blame the parents. In this case, that would be useless. So the schools really have taken upon themselves the role of filling in that gap?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, you know, we always hear people say, oh, we don't want the schools raising our kids. Well, guess what? Schools are raising our kids, and often to the complete exclusion of anybody else raising them, and particularly in the case of this school.
And the Houston Independent School District initiated the Apollo 20 program after seeing the high dropout rate at Sharpstown and three other high schools. What is that program? Is it, first of all, is it named after is it named because Houston is the home of the space program?
You know, it occurred to me that someone would ask that question, and I don't actually know why it's called the Apollo 20 program. I know that the Sharpstown's mascots are the Apollos, uh-huh. and that's because of the space program. But the Apollo 20 program is a program aimed at turning around 20 of the worst schools in the Houston School District, and it's done under the auspices of the Harvard University Education Labs. And it is something that has been in effect. It's a 3-year program that has been in effect for 2 years so far. They're in their third year.
And they have five tenets for transforming a school.
They do. They believe primarily in more time on task, more focus for the kids. So they have a longer school day. They have a longer school year in these schools. They believe in intensive tutoring, particularly in math, which is an enormous stumbling block for kids that are at risk of dropping out. They believe in data-driven education, really sort of doing everything they can to calibrate what's working and what isn't.
Studies have been done as to how important teachers' expectations are for the success of their students. Has that been dealt with in this program?
Oh, in this program, for sure. One of the first things that they did in this program is change all the top leadership at these schools and basically make all the teachers reapply for their jobs. So I think the first year at Sharpstown, it was something like 35 new teachers or something like that. It's like 80% of the staff.
And these are teachers who don't immediately assume that if a kid is troubled that this is a lost cause.
Oh, no, no. And, you know, so much of the skill that these teachers bring to their job is so outside of what I think of what they learn in teacher school. You know, it's very much being a social worker, counselor, therapist, you know.
Well, how is this funded? This sounds expensive.
It's moderately expensive. It's a $60 million program, which sounds like a lot of money, but that's 20 schools over 3 years. And it's funded primarily through federal grants and through private donations.
And the Sharpstown has a business manager, doesn't it?
Yeah, but
what does he do?
Well, that's not in entirely unusual down there. I mean, a high school is, when you think of it, it's like a $2 million business. I mean, they buy goods and services, and money comes in and money comes out. So, yeah, they have a guy that runs that.
And high schools are the only schools in the Apollo 20 program?
No, there's only four high schools. The majority of them are elementary schools. Which is a very important step to reducing the dropout rate, because that's where dropouts come from.
So this sounds great. What was the reaction in Houston when the plan was proposed?
I wouldn't say that it was universally applauded, and primarily because it involved uprooting so many principals and teachers from these schools. And for all the problems that these schools have, you know, people get comfortable with the people they have. They love the principal. He's been there for 15 years, you know, whatever. And change is hard for a lot of people, but sometimes it's really necessary.
For students who have jobs after school, the extended hours must have been a real problem.
To a certain extent, they were. And you know, a lot of students transferred out of these schools when the program began, but an awful lot of students transferred in, too, because it seemed like something that they were interested in.
There are two alternative options the documentary discusses for students when they withdraw or are kicked out of Sharpstown: CEP and the TWILED program. What's CEP?
CEP is basically, it's reform school, if you had to boil it down to something. It's the school district's alternative school for discipline problems. And it's CEP is interesting in that it's actually run by a private corporation, a private for-profit corporation. It's not part of the school district, but it's subcontracted by the school district. And it's a place, I don't have a strong opinion whether the school itself is any good, but it's certainly a place that kids don't want to go to. And in fact, one of the kids in our documentary commits an infraction on campus that should, by all rights, get him sent to CEP. And it becomes a real quandary for the principal, because he knows if he sends this kid to CEP, he's not going to CEP or anywhere else. He's just going to drop out. So how do you handle that? You know, and these are the sort of challenges they deal with every day there.
How long does a kid typically stay in CEP?
It depends on the infraction and the sentence, as it were, but it can be up to 180 days, so an entire school year.
And then there is the TWILIGHT program.
The TWILIGHT program is something that they have initiated fairly recently in the Houston School District, and it's basically like night school for high school kids. It's flexible hours. It's a lot of it is online, you know, driven, so kids can work at their own pace, and it's great for kids who have children of their own or have jobs or can't be where you need them to be between the hours of 8 and 4.
Are these kinds of programs unique to Houston?
I don't think they're unique to Houston. You know, we simply had to focus somewhere.
But I mean, the Harvard people, are they going into other cities as well?
Oh, no. The Apollo 20 program is completely unique to Houston. Houston is so far the only city that has gone forward and implemented it.
Uh-huh. Are there ways are there indications that a high school kid is at risk of dropping out?
There are so many, and that's the hard part, is being trained to sort of spot the signs, because some of them just exist on paper. There are people that say that you can look at third grade reading scores and with an 80% degree of accuracy spot the dropouts. You know, kids that fail ninth grade algebra, you know, are really at risk of dropping out. But there are other broader warning signs. Kids that have been kept back a grade or two grades, you know, kids that are therefore older than everybody in their class.
They say in the film, if a kid is 2 years older, he's most likely to drop out. I say he. The girls do drop out as well.
They do as well. Boys more than girls, but sure. I mean, look, who wants to be a 19-year-old 11th grader? Mm-hmm. You know, so it's difficult. It's socially awkward.
Were all of the kids that you followed at high risk? Had
yes.
they been judged as such?
Yeah. I mean, the school itself helped us identify the kids to focus on. I mean, we can't just sort of go up and down the hallways knocking on the doors. So we sat down with the principal and his staff and told them the kind of kids that we were interested in. And they, you know, we must have met 15 kids or so in one sitting and then gradually just focused down as the filming went on.
To the four that we wound up with. Also, because these kids also have really complicated stories, and we can't help but feel for them in their situations.
Oh, truly.
You didn't want us to say, well, this kid should leave school because he's a real problem.
Well, sure. I mean, we weren't interested in the hopeless cases nor the ones that were, you know, surefire to make it. So in a sense, I feel like we almost stacked the odds a little bit against the school because, you know, they have a much greater success rate than you might think from watching the documentary.
How did you get permission to film the students who had no parents or guardians?
Everybody at the school has a legal guardian of some sort on record. And, you know, we had to get signed releases from them. An awful lot of the times kids may not live with their legal guardian, but there is someone on record as being the grown-up.
Did all these kids grow up in Houston? Houston's kind of a magnet city, isn't it?
Of the four kids that we followed, two of them are native to Houston. One girl was a Katrina refugee from New Orleans, and another guy had moved from California, from Oakland.
We're going to take a little break now. When we come back, I want to talk about one of those students that you focus on, Marco. My guest is Frank Kuhan, K-O-U-G-H-A-N. He is the writer and producer of a documentary that will be shown tonight on PBS as part of the Frontline series called Dropout Nation. Stay with us for more. We're back with Frank Kuhan, who has made a film called Dropout Nation. It is going to be on PBS tonight at 9 as part of the Frontline series about a school in Houston and four kids who are very likely to drop out and the school's attempts to keep them from not dropping out despite going against all the odds. Let's talk about Marco, who decides to enlist in the Army after graduation. Is that common among students in these schools?
Oh, it's very common. And, you know, Marco has academic aspirations, and he's talked about going to college, but he simply can't afford it right now. And, frankly, I think the Army would be good for him. Marco could use the sense of discipline that it instills.
Well, he also has all sorts of other problems to deal with. These kids are expected to act like adults within their outside life in many cases.
Oh, Marco was essentially the man of the house from the age of 16. Marco has a mother and two younger sisters. His parents, who are from Mexico, his father was deported a couple of years ago. And Marco basically dropped out of school to support his family and was working, you know, around the clock to do that. And he sort of had the classic epiphany of, boy, you know, it's 3 a.m. and I'm driving home from my minimum wage job and this is going to be my life. And so he came back to Sharpstown and they let him in. And then shortly after we met him in January, his mother was picked up. And she was on the verge of deportation when we first started filming in the school.
How many of these kids do end up graduating?
It's a very elusive number. The graduation rate at Sharpstown right now, and understand this is a school that's working hard to turn that around, is under 50%, meaning that of the kids that enroll in the freshman class, 4 years later, less than half of them are wearing a cap and gown at graduation.
Is that an improvement from before the Apollo program?
It's hard to say because you need to follow that cohort for four whole years to get that. The sense of the people at the school is that you will see that in the numbers in the future.
At the beginning of the film, there's this kid who plans to drop out. He seems to have no idea what he's going to do, and the school administrators ask him, well, are you going to survive?
What's your plan?
He doesn't have any.
No, kids don't have a plan. Kids don't have a plan. And you know, that's a huge problem that kids have. They don't think of themselves when they're 40 and they haven't graduated from high school. That's the real problem.
Now, he can return, as Marco did, but that kid seems less likely to.
He
said, I just don't like school.
I don't, and he doesn't. I mean, if I were wagering, I wouldn't bet heavily on this kid, but he is back this fall, I understand. So, you know, to my surprise.
How does the school district even count a student as a dropout?
That is the most complicated issue of all, because there's no upside to a school for honestly reporting its dropout rate, nor for a school district. And it gets confusing because kids do leave school for a lot of legitimate reasons. They move to other schools. They move to another state.
But there are leaver codes, aren't there?
There's a system in Texas called the leaver code system, which is when a kid leaves the school, he's coded in some way to indicate where he's gone. So not everybody is a dropout.
Well, it's my sense that we view all of these things differently than we did when I went to school. My high school was closed down way after I left, as a school that was an underperforming school. Well, I think it probably was an underperforming school when I was there, but that was okay. Some kids did very well in certain classes. Other kids didn't do as well. That was understood to be the way things were.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And, you know, that's a culture that's changing. And you can see that in the dropout rate, which is reasonably steadily declining. The difference between when you were in high school and when these kids are in high school is you could have dropped out of your high school and still gone and got a job. A job that probably paid very well, a factory, you know, $18.50 an hour. You can't go do that now. That economy doesn't exist anymore. So it's literally the worst time imaginable to be without a high school diploma.
Does a student have to provide paperwork to prove that he's leaving the country or transferring to another school or plans to leave for good because he is going to try to get a job?
Over the years, the paperwork requirements have gotten a little more stringent down there. So the burden is on the school actually to document where a kid is going, but not in every case can they do that.
And then there are these private schools that students often transfer into near the end of their high school careers. What are they?
Well, you see, that's one of the sort of abuses of the leaver code system. I mean, Sharpstown, which is a high poverty high school, has dozens of kids every year that leave to go to private school, which I think of as, you know, Phillips Academy or Choate. But no, there are these online, you know, take a test, $300, get your diploma in the same day, you know, what we would refer to as a diploma mill.
Does anybody respect those diplomas?
In the state of Texas, they do. That's why it's hard to say that it's not worth anything. They exploit a loophole in the law that's aimed at homeschools. In Texas, you're not allowed to discriminate against a homeschool education. So people open up these basically internet schools that call themselves homeschool support systems. And the legitimate homeschoolers are furious about it, but it's their loophole in the law.
Well, there seem to be a lot of loopholes in Texas schools. The Texas school system unique in this country, because when we often talk about it, we talk about the textbook aspect of it, how textbooks are chosen. Mm-hmm. I don't know whether that even comes up in a school like Sharpstown.
Not so much, but Texas is not unlike the rest of the country. Texas is just sort of the rest of the country writ large, you know what I mean? And so that's why we decided to focus on Texas in the first place. It sort of seems that every trend in education it tends to emanate from Texas. So it's a great place to go to catch the wave, as it were.
Are the debates that we're hearing in other parts of the country over teaching creationism, for example, would they even apply to a school like Sharpstown?
No. Sharpstown, the problem is getting kids in the door and keeping them there to teach them anything.
And in your film, the students have the phone numbers of the staff and do contact them outside of school hours. That seems surprising.
To me, that was the most surprising thing.
Is that something the staff signs on to?
Oh, totally. Totally. If you want to teach in that school, that's what you have to do. The boundaries, the barriers that I considered normal in high school, I never saw a teacher outside of school. They don't exist there, and they can't.
And sometimes, as you show in the film, a staff member will drive a student to school.
Oh, they'll drive
them. They'll go to the kid and say, mm-hmm. You're late. I'll try to get you in before you miss your first class.
They'll drive them to doctor's appointments. They'll drive them to daycare. They'll get them to class. They'll get them home. They'll run errands for them. They'll loan them money. And that's the school has a motto, whatever it takes.
Well, does the school compensate staff for these things?
I don't believe so. These aren't enormous expenditures, but no. Teachers are always slipping students $5 for groceries, a Metro card or, some sort of bus voucher. And they have to, because if they don't, the kids won't be there.
Or even take them in, give them a place to sleep for a while.
Absolutely. Absolutely. The one woman that we profile in the film, one of the teachers there, takes one of the kids in. And I thought that was the most remarkable thing. And she said, no, the teachers, she ran through a list of other teachers at the school who had kids living with them, for whatever period of time. But it's not uncommon there.
My guest is Frank Kuhn. His film that he wrote and produced is called Dropout Nation. It will be shown tonight on PBS at 9 o'clock as part of the Frontline series. Your previous documentaries focused on historical figures. What led you to do a thing on high school dropout?
Well, it's been a long and interesting career. Before the historical documentaries, I had been at 60 Minutes for a long time, and then I actually worked for Frontline for a stretch in the early 90s. And this opportunity came up to do this film with the folks at WGBH and Frontline as part of this big American graduate public media initiative focusing on the dropout.
Well, I'd imagine it's rather disruptive to go into a high school, especially a high school that has as many problems as Sharpstown, with a film crew and show up on a regular basis.
We tried to be as non-disruptive as possible. And the truth is the chaos in these people's lives, I don't mean to make the school sound like an asylum, because it is a very well-run school, but it seems like anything could happen on any given day there. We were far from the least interesting thing going on there.
Mm-hmm. Well, did the kids who were being singled out, they must have felt like they were kind of special.
They did. And
you think that helped them, actually motivated them to try to stay a little longer?
I think in some cases it did. The kids had good days and bad days, and we were, certainly not the biggest thing in their life. But there were days when they knew we were going to be there that I'm sure they made a little extra effort to be there. And again, like the school says, whatever it takes.
Have they seen the film?
No. Nobody affiliated with the Sharpstown has seen the film yet, so that'll be interesting too.
And you also had to spend a fair amount of time with staff, mm-hmm. as well as with the students. What's the ratio of staff to students at this school?
Oh, boy. I don't know the precise ratio. Sharpstown, I wouldn't say, suffers from severe overcrowding, but the students vastly outnumber the staff, and it's hard to keep tabs on them all.
Well, the staff has to be committed, and I'm sure that they talked about how Sharpstown compared to other schools that they had taught at.
Oh, yeah. And the interesting thing at Sharpstown is this new culture of trying to turn the school around. I mean, everybody's very enthusiastic and imbued with a sense of mission that makes it easier to go through what are typically 12-hour days for these folks.
Well, other school districts aren't as fortunate as the ones in Houston that you have filmed, developing a program like Apollo 20. Do you think that the problem of high school dropouts in America is accurately highlighted in this documentary?
I hope that it is. It's not a problem that I was aware of before we started working on it. I was sent to make a documentary about the dropout crisis, and I said, what on earth are you talking about? So I don't think it gets nearly as much attention as it ought to.
And do you think that people who don't have kids should be concerned about the high dropout rate?
For sure. You know, every dropout is a tragedy on a personal level, but also every dropout costs us as a society something like $300,000 over the course of their lifetime in taxes that they're not paying, in public services that they're using, social services, incarceration, you name it. And it's something in excess of 1 million kids a year drop out. That's a $300 billion a year hole that we're burning.
Were you able to talk to any of the kids who had dropped out, find out how they were surviving?
We talked to kids in the school that had dropped out and had turned around and come back. And those were typically the most inspiring stories, because those are kids that had gotten a taste of life on the outside and realized that they had made a mistake. A lot of kids drop out of school not realizing that they're making a mistake.
And if you have a job and you have to please a boss, it gives you a whole different perspective on pleasing a teacher, actually.
Exactly.
Dealing with an assignment in a class.
Exactly. Biology homework seems sometimes a little less stressful.
So when you did this, you were just doing a straight documentary. You weren't thinking about a target audience, were you?
No, not at all. I mean, we just showed up. We didn't even have a story planned out. We just showed up and sort of followed what happened, wherever it led.
Although education and education policy is an issue in this year's election, is it just coincidental that it's coming out at this time?
It's totally coincidental. And again, it's come out as part of a concerted push on the part of public media to highlight this one particular issue that they feel is not getting enough attention.
Well, do you think that federal programs, which seem to be more oriented toward testing and also giving special benefits to the schools that do well, are missing the point?
I do, because the problem with those programs is that they reward the schools that are already doing well. If you want to focus resources somewhere, focus it on the schools that are just hanging on by their fingernails, because they're the ones that need it. And, I don't have strong opinions on the efficacy of standardized testing, but I know that in Texas, they've just once again changed the state test. So now there are four tests that kids must pass in order to graduate, rather than just one previously. You have essentially upped the hurdle four times as large for kids like the ones that we're profiling in this film.
You're not talking about four different regions type tests, are you?
It's called the STAR test, which is one of those academic acronyms that I can't remember what it is. But there had previously been one test that you have to pass on the way to graduation. Now there are four separate ones, and you have to pass each one of them. They keep getting waivers to prevent the implementation of it, which right there should be a sign.
Well, if unemployment weren't still above 8%, do you think we would be as concerned about the dropout rate?
I think that we should. I think that we should be. I mean, the reason that the unemployment rate is so high is that dropouts comprise an enormous percentage of it.
Frank Kuhn is the writer and producer of Dropout Nation, which is being presented tonight as part of the Frontline series on PBS. You can watch it at 9 o'clock. And I want to thank you so much for coming by to talk about it on our show.
Thank you so much for having me.